Thank you, Alan. So this is paper 1B. So as we sort of highlighted, this report, we very much reflected on the feedback from the last meeting and have revised the structure and how we've ordered the material for you. What we're trying to do is just more clearly highlight the due process procedures and decisions that have been undertaken in the period since your last meeting, and where appropriate and where we've been able to do that, really tabulate that so you can more readily see that the necessary due process steps have been undertaken. So in particular, hopefully you can see that with the tables in the front part of the paper, paragraphs 6, 7 and 9 for the due process documents issued in the period. But we still wanted to provide you with sufficient background information so that you can fulfil your role of oversight over the board's technical activities. The other change, as we agreed last time, we're not asking you as a result of this report to confirm that all projects are proceeding in line with the due process handbook. We agreed that that was sort of too broad a question. So as the paper highlights up front, we expect to ask for your explicit confirmation on due process only on specific projects, and really at the specified points in time as required by the handbook, which Sam has tabulated in paper 1E for the meeting, we'll talk about later, but in that chart that you had later, it really highlights the specific points when you're specifically asked to confirm or seek your approval is required. So, you know, a very typical one, and perhaps one of the key ones, is when we undertake a life cycle review on the project before that project is completed. So I'm going to take most of the paper as read because I don't really think there are that many significant points for discussion. So I'll just highlight a few particular matters from the paper. So the first was at paragraph 11 on page 6 in connection with the post-implementation review of IFRS 13. Now, IFRS 13 is our standard that provides the requirements about how to measure fair value. So when another standard requires the use of fair value measurement, one uses IFRS 13 to tell you effectively how to develop a fair value measurement. And the post-implementation review process is the process the board undertakes some years after a standard has become effective to take stock of how well that standard is actually working in practice. And the paper highlights that the board has now largely completed its review. The overall assessment is that the IFRS 13 is working well, and there's really no standard-setting activities necessarily directly coming from that review. And I'm really flagging just to highlight this is an issue that we will bring to the next meeting of this committee and really ask you to review the process. We'll ask you to confirm you're comfortable with that process and with the draft feedback report that will be published for stakeholders, and we'll do that at the next meeting. So this is a heads up, if you like, of something that's coming on your future agenda. Then you turn to paragraph 19 and the conceptual framework, because obviously the issue of the conceptual framework in the period at the end of March was perhaps the most significant due process publication in the period. And it came out on schedule. And that really marks the end of a very major undertaking to revise and update our old conceptual framework, which largely dates from the 1980s. And the project started in 2012. Now, the DPOC did its life cycle review, so it looked at all of the due process for the project at its meeting this time last year. But what we've highlighted in paragraph 21 of this paper really is to just, if you like, complete the picture since the committee did its life cycle review and really highlight the thorough review and balloting process that the board went through in line with the due process handbook, and really just really to close the loop. I think, Alan, this is something that you asked to do as it is such a major project.
Michelle?
This is a public document. The papers of the meeting are public documents.
So I went on the website trying to read it, and it, maybe I'm mistaken, but I
could not act, the document was not available for public.
This paper?
No. The conceptual framework.
The conceptual framework. Well, the all of the supporting materials are publicly available. The conceptual framework itself as a document, I think I've got this right, is effectively, it was available on the day it was published, but effectively to subscribers on through the EI4S system. And so in the way with our usual process with documents, it becomes a publicly available document when it gets incorporated into the bound volumes next year.
Okay.
And will then be freely available on the website as well. So there's our new standards typically do not become freely available on the date of issuance. There's a delay until they're effectively consolidated into the next year's bound volume, and then they become freely available.
But from a due process standpoint, that's not an issue, that's not available?
I don't think that's a due process issue. But all of our sort of supporting materials for the conceptual framework, so the webcasts, the snapshots, and all that type of material is available to, you know, just on the main website without, it isn't behind the EI4S, if you like, paywall.
Henry, can you explain the rationale for that? I mean, I would think once it's been adopted, it should be made available. Why would there be a delay?
I think largely that this is a historic and there's sort of very much commercial reasons associated with this and protection of intellectual property, and I don't think I'm probably the right person to speak to this,
I don't want to prolong it, but could we ask staff to take a look at that?
Sure.
Because I would think if it's going to be publicly available anyways, why wouldn't it be publicly available once it has been issued?
Yeah. I'll follow that up for you, sure.
But just so, I mean, I don't want to prolong as well, but just so you're aware, effectively, although we make the authoritative part of the standards freely available, the basis for conclusions, the illustrative examples, the non-mandatory material, it is never actually just put up on the website freely available.
Put up for subscribers, is it not, Henry?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, this is a commercial issue, not an information issue. We can look at it and talk about it, but it's not that it's buried under 6 feet of sand. Yes. It's behind a paywall.
No, but the publicly available stuff should be publicly available, right? I mean, I would think. I could understand basis for conclusion and all that, but the standard itself should be available.
This isn't actually a standard, and it's not formally endorsed in the EU, so it has a slightly different status to the others.
Larry?
Thank you. Not to belabor this point, but when you say it's not a due process issue, it's a commercial issue, if, as the standards are being developed, wouldn't it be important? What am I? I'm missing something here.
Well, let me just try and say something. So everything in terms of development of the standard is absolutely publicly, freely available on the main website. What we're talking about is once we issue a standard, the standard becomes immediately available in our EI4S, which is a subscriber access. It's not immediate, but the non-mandatory material of those standards does then become available to all stakeholders. The non-mandatory material just remains within EI4S. But the point, I think, Larry, it's a fair point, but just to confirm, everything in terms of the development of the standard, in terms of exposure drafts, all of our explanatory material, all of the board papers, everything is absolutely immediately available on the website for free. So, moving on to paragraph 29, goodwill and impairment. I just wanted to call this one project out, because it really has moved on a little bit since we put the paper together, and you'll also have seen this project being mentioned in the last two of your regular monthly emails that we send you before the board meeting. And really, I want to just highlight that I think the board had something of a, you might say, a watershed discussion a couple of weeks ago at the last meeting. The paper highlights that the board was considering whether and how to seek some targeted feedback on a new approach, what it calls the headroom approach, that it's been exploring to address concerns that impairments of goodwill that's acquired in a business combination are recognised too late. And at that discussion, the board took stock of the new approach and they concluded that they don't really see that approach as being the solution to propose to this particular problem. So I think there's more work to be done here in terms of figuring out what goes in the consultation document. And so this is just to sort of give you a heads up about where we've got to in that project. Undoubtedly, those discussions will also, I think, involve the board at least being asked to look again at its tentative decision not to require amortization of goodwill. So this one is watch this space, essentially. And then finally, what I just wanted to highlight was in paragraph 35, the transition resource group for IFRS 17, the new insurance contract standard, highlighting this because obviously supporting IFRS 17 is a very important part of our work at the moment. The TRG has now had two substantive full-day technical meetings, one in February, one early on in May. I think we previewed that meeting at the last DPOC meeting. I want to just highlight really that all of the stakeholder submissions that we've received, bar four, have now been considered by the Transition Resource Group, so we're very much on top of questions that are coming from stakeholders on the new standard. And really, just to highlight also that so far, all that those discussions have just highlighted is that there is potentially a couple of very narrow scope amendments that we might consider making to IFRS 17 through the annual improvements process. And then just on insurance, I just wanted to also highlight, it's not mentioned in the paper, but our efforts on investor education, which I know was something important to this committee. That work is ongoing and continuing. It's very important to us to ensure that investors understand the information that they're going to get when companies are applying the new standard. Sheila.
Just on IFRS 17, I know that there are concerns in several companies about the implementation date. We heard in Hong Kong that, in fact, some of the accounting software isn't even available to be able to implement the standard. And I was just wondering if the board is considering reviewing the implementation date, and if they did, what would be the timing of that?
The short answer is that it's something that we're constantly monitoring because we have been hearing feedback on it. What we did want to make sure is that we didn't want to destabilise the implementation by signalling a delay, you know, as soon as we issue the standard. So we're sort of trying to be careful to balance that. But we're definitely monitoring that and trying to work out if and when we should discuss that based on having sufficient information. But it's something we're watching very closely.
Wiseman?
So I want to ask a question about these principles of disclosure. We had a discussion paper in March 2017, and is the comment here saying that we are not going to progress it beyond a discussion, document, and we're abandoning the preparation of principles of disclosure? And then we are just going to focus on targeted standards, disclosures relating to specific standards, not have an overarching principles document.
I think what I was trying to convey in the paper was effectively that, you know, the board has considered all of the feedback that's come from that discussion paper. One of their initial tasks that they're going to stream off and start working on is this targeted standards level review of some of the standards that you've highlighted. But other topics from the discussion paper, broader topics, are still open for discussion with the board, and will be some of those will be feeding into other projects, but the board's still going to have some more discussions about how they deal with those particular topics.
I'd agree with what Henry said. He's exactly right, but also Wiseman, I think the important thing that one of the important messages we got from the discussion paper was there was lots of nice ideas in there about better describing what the objectives of good communication would be and things like that, which people thought were sort of nice but in themselves not solutions. And we got quite strong feedback that people thought that the single most targeted thing we could do to get quick wins, if you like, in terms of the quality of disclosure would actually be to focus on the standards level review. So in a sense, we were told, don't mess around with the other stuff, rather prioritise the standards level review. So I think it's a response to let's do something more quickly, that we're moving on to piloting some specific standard level work.
Okay. Any more questions? Michelle?
One short question. On page 15, on the management commentary table, there is no date around in terms of next due process steps, and I was wondering, there's dates for everything else, so I was wondering if there's any reason for that.
Yeah, we can. So this paper was actually applicable as of, I think, end of April. So at the time that this paper was prepared, we didn't have a date because we hadn't gone through our detailed project planning. Since that time, though, Yulia, who is our lead on the project, has gone through the detailed project planning, and the plan, the expectation is that we would have an exposure draft issued in half one of 2020.
Half one.
Yeah. And one of the reasons for that is that there's a significant amount of stakeholder engagement that we plan to do through the management commentary consultative group, which we'll be talking about shortly.